So I want to take you back. It was 2012, summertime or thereabout. Some of the details in the story are extremely vivid in my mind. Others fade away. I think I was borrowing my parents' van. It was a Friday night, and it was Friday night fellowship time. And so I pulled in to my parents' house where we were having fellowship at, as was our custom every Friday. Pulled in, probably had kids with me that I had picked up. I can't rightly recall that detail. Pulled in, got out of the van, and a number of the kids had beaten me to fellowship. My wife was there. Some of the other helpers were already there. And so I got out of my car, and I saw some of the kids, and some kids that I didn't recognize yet, which wasn't an unusual thing during that time. So I got out of the car. If I had kids, they got out with me and headed over to parents' back deck, which is where a lot of times fellowship would start. And as I was approaching, there was a young man who I had never seen before. And I'm coming around the corner, and as I'm coming around the corner, I see that he is giving an obscene gesture to one of the other kids. So I approach him, and I said, "We don't do that here." And I stuck out my hand. I said, "My name's Marshall. Nice to meet you." And he said, "My name's David." Okay. And so we proceeded to the deck and started to ask him some questions. He was very forthright with me. He said, "Just so you know, I'm only here because my friends are here. And I'm an atheist. And I am going to argue with every single point you make." Good to know up front. I'm like, "Great, I'm glad you're here." Said, "Truth does not fear examination, and I welcome your questions." And I don't think he had met a religious person that had that kind of response before. But it takes a whole lot more than that to throw David off his game. And so he went on being himself, but he continued to come back. And sure enough, he argued with me every step of the way. But it was great. Because even though he was arguing, he was also thinking. And so this 16-year-old boy was asking these questions. His family was not at all connected to the church. He went to government school. He was coming to fellowship because his friends were coming to fellowship. But he kept coming. He kept asking questions. And got to the point where I was like, "Well, you know, probably it would make some sense for us to explore these questions a little bit further on a one-on-one basis." He was down for that. And the fact that he was 16 years old, I planned on taking it pretty slow, pretty steady. I appreciate, you know, Lorenzo's thoughts earlier. It really is important to have a foundation. It's important to have a track to run on, and I use the track to run on. But I knew who I was dealing with here, and so we laid a few things in for, used the pre-proof study and that sort of thing, and knew that we were going to need to spend some time on creation. And so actually I was using Jared Schaefer's outline for the scientific creationism that he did, I think a number of times he's done in Billings there. And so we started going through those notes on a weekly basis. And we did that for a number of weeks. We got, I don't know, 20-some pages into the notes, and we did that for 8 or 10 weeks, and maybe longer, maybe 12 weeks. And I might not get this quote exactly right, but he finally just said, "I give." I give. Nah, I can't argue anymore. Which, if you know David, that's saying something. I can't argue anymore. You've convinced me. Great. We can move on to the next thing now. And so it was not just smooth sailing from that point. It was interesting. He was a teenager, and you know, one of the jobs of teenagers is to push boundaries. And so he let me know. I'd pick him up for Bible study, and we would go to Bible study. He wasn't driving, and so I'd pick him up for study, and we'd do Bible study together, and I'd pick him up at his house, and he'd tell me that the insult that his dad just hurled at me as I was picking him up, and I'm like, well, okay, that's all right. And but he stuck with it, and continued to come to fellowship, came to youth camp, two or three times, I believe. Kept coming to fellowship, kept Bible studying. And so finally he got to the point where he was like, I need to get immersed. Right? He was 17, 18 by this point. I think 18. I need to get immersed. Great. Let's get her done. So, sure enough, he got immersed into Christ, and we continued to study. Continue to work through things. And, really, really great dude. The interesting thing, though, is that he continued to invest. He continued to ask those questions. He continued to move forward. And he never stopped being who he is, but he started to get involved. See, he was discipled. He was converted to Christ. And so his next steps really became, how do I help? And before I knew it, Brenna and I had restarted the Christian school there in Wauseon, and he was working now, and he went to work at, I can't remember, I think it was like 8 or 9. So he would come to the Christian school just to hang out for a little bit of time before work. And he did this every single day. And he continued to, he started hitting the assemblies. And again, it wasn't always smooth sailing. I mean, for the first few years that he was at assembly, he would stay up until about 3 o'clock in the morning, the Saturday night before. And so he would doze off during almost every single assembly. And it was like, oh, there's David sleeping again. But he wanted to be there. There was nobody making him be there. His parents couldn't be more oppositional about him being there. And he continued to move forward. And, believe it or not, he's helped me with Friday Night Fellowship. He's come into this group that, he came in saying, I'm an atheist. I believe in evolution. I'm going to argue with every single point only a few years later, all of a sudden, he's arguing with me instead of arguing against me. And he's continued to grow. He's just one example. But I'm really proud of David in particular. Some of you guys know David. He's helped in our Christian school for the past, I don't know how many years now, 3 or 4 years. He works a full-time job. He volunteers in the Christian school. And he's my math teacher 4 days a week. Gets there at 8 o'clock, leaves at 1, took a second shift job specifically because he wants to be able to help in the school. So he worked second shift, and I was like, for a while he was working second shift at a beryllium plant, and he was working security, and it was about an hour and 15 minutes from Wauseon. And I was like, man, why don't you at least get like a third shift job? He said, no, I don't want to get a third shift job. He's like, I'm actually my best in the mornings, and I want the school to have my best. I don't want work to have my best. I really appreciated that. Thankfully, he's working 10 minutes from Wauseon now instead of an hour and 15 minutes from Wauseon. I think it makes his life balance a little bit easier. But I appreciate guys like David. Now, I tell you that story to encourage you, because there's a lot of other Davids out there. But I also want to tell you that because this is all by the grace of God. This is all because of the blessing of God. And this is all for the sake of Jesus' name. But I'd submit to you that most, almost all good things, they happen on purpose and with intentionality. And David, even though I didn't have one little bit of David coming to fellowship that first night, you know, we're going to put that 100% on God. There was some purpose and some intentionality in my desire to serve God and give opportunities for guys like David to have something to plug into. It didn't happen on accident. It happened purposefully because I want to serve and honor the Lord. I want to love God. I want to love others. And so with that, there'll be some things tonight. Mr. Wilson asked me to talk about some of the young people that we've had the opportunity to impact, and then their effect on the congregation as a whole. And so I'm going to focus a lot on the young people that we've had the opportunity to impact and then their impact in the congregation. But I hope that there's some principles here that as you're working with people generally, that I think that you'll be able to apply. Because it really is about loving God and loving others. And if you love God and you love others, then you find a way to be effective. And you're really interested in being effective if you truly love God and love others. Now, there's a lot of people that talk about loving God and loving others that really don't seem to be that interested to me in being effective. So I have to ask the question if they're really interested in actually loving God and loving others, or doing the thing that happens to be convenient to them in the moment. So I'm just going to share a lot of experiences, and in a lot of ways it's a little bit uncomfortable for me because, you know, myself is not typically my favorite topic. But these are some things that I've had the opportunity to experience. And again, this is all from the grace of God. And I also want to highlight as we go through this, there were a lot of people who played key and significant roles all along the way. And those key and significant roles, they probably didn't know at the time or didn't feel like those were such key and significant roles. But they made a difference. They made an impact. And those kids didn't always necessarily know what that was, but they felt it. Because they knew that people loved and accepted them, and they were drawn to that. See, what kids need is really what people need. And so we learn to be able to love God and love others. I'm going to share some things, particularly working with young people tonight. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And we're going to take a look at the second verse. 2 Timothy 2:2, "And the things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Let's pray, man. Great and glorious Heavenly Father, Lord, I'm thankful for this opportunity to be able to share with these men. Father, I pray that your name might be given glory in all things. I pray that we would be those who are investing in your kingdom. Father, I'm thankful that you have seen fit to make us a part of your plan, to make us a part of investing in something that has eternal purpose, Lord God, that you've seen fit to work through us, to work through our faith, that we get to work on something that has eternal impact. Father, it is such a great blessing to be able to work with you, knowing that you are our strength, you are our victory, you are our success, and as we go with you, that is what we have, strength and victory and success. I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So how did we get there to that night in 2012. We did get there intentionally. I had the opportunity. I'm really thankful for my parents. They sent me to Bozeman when I was in high school to be able to see and observe the Christian school out there, to be able to see and observe the fellowship group that they had going there in Bozeman. We had a Christian school of 3 kids, and so Bozeman at the time was, I don't know, 40 or 50 kids, and so that was a massive school, man. 40 or 50 kids was something unlike anything that I had ever experienced, and I was just thankful to have some boys my age. It's not something that I had experienced in the local congregation. As a congregation, we were probably 30 or 35 people in the Christian school. There were only 3 of us. I appreciate my parents' vision in starting the Christian school, because it really paved the way for me to be able to know how to restart the Christian school in our local congregation down the road. Unbeknownst to me, the Lord was doing a little bit of work on my wife in a Christian school in Billings as well, to be able to prepare her to be able to help me to restart that Christian school in Wauseon some years later. And so I had this vision. And from that very time of having that vision, you know, my dad was a smart guy. There's a lot of things that you can say about my dad. My dad was street smart. Okay. And he knew how to communicate. And one of the things that you know, my dad always pushed me in direction of being a preacher. And clearly, I had to choose that for myself at some point in some direction. But I was sold on the mission. Our family's purpose was to seek and save the lost. Our family's purpose was to build up the church. And so I saw that and bought into that. And so I'll tell you this, I came back at 16, and so they had a fellowship group in Bozeman. So I was going to start a fellowship group in Wauseon. And we did some good things. Now, I would always go back to Bozeman, and so there was no fellowship group while I was gone. And we get her restarted back up once I came back. Well, long story short, moved back out to Montana for a short period of time, secured myself a wife, right, Kevin, and brought her back to Ohio. And you know, there was a break in the fellowship group. And so I came back to Ohio, and we started another fellowship group that was kind of my peers. And that's what it had been when I was 16 years old, is my peers. And so at 19 years old, it was my peers. And Brenda and I did that for a couple of years, and I started noticing that to really build something, okay, I was gonna have to work from the ground level. And it was one thing to encourage my peers, to have fellowship, but that wasn't necessarily going to equip me to be able to really accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. That ultimately, I was going to have to learn to train others. I was going to have to learn to do, as 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2 talks about, to learn myself to be able to have something to teach. And so, like, made the decision that we're going to start a fellowship group, Brenna and myself. We're going to start a fellowship group for junior high and high school kids. And so I looked for godly counsel. I talked to people who had been successful, who had run successful fellowship groups. And I asked them questions about what was it that made your fellowship group successful. And I wasn't looking for some sort of specific, this is what you do when you do it. I knew that there wasn't a silver bullet that would unlock, you know, if you start it at 7 o'clock and Friday is the magic day, right? And as long as you do it at 7 o'clock on Friday, and this is the, you know, Spotify playlists weren't around back then, but you know, this is the perfect Spotify playlist, right? And snacks, you know, really important to have snacks. I knew that there was no specific code to crack, but I wanted to know general principles of what made things successful, right? Who's been successful before? And that took some evaluation on my behalf. Again, maybe flawed evaluation at 20 years old, but really it talked to some people who had fruit. I appreciate that. My dad laid some of those things in for me too. Why would I get opinions from people who didn't have fruit? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They're willing to share those opinions, but what are those opinions really worth? And so I got input from people who had fruit, people who had been successful. And so we got started. And I'll tell you what, this ended up being a huge blessing in the hand of God. But there was like two or three kids. And those two or three kids were not exactly super consistent. But I knew that it needed to be done. And the idea was, you know, make it be great. Make it be an environment where these kids can ask spiritually relevant questions, where they know that they are loved and accepted. And so, by the grace and the blessing of God, they saw that. They saw that. And because they were looking for something real, not only did they see that, but they wanted to bring all of their friends. Because there's something real here. They actually care about me. And they want me to win. And they're for me. And there's no other agenda. Now, I'll probably say this again, but I'm thinking about it right now and I don't want to forget it. One of the things that is really dangerous and that I hear, you know, people will ask me questions through the years about, they'll see that the fellowship group has borne fruit and been successful and those sorts of things. And so they'll ask me questions, and implicit within the question and sometimes explicitly said is, yeah, I really want to get to the kids, because if you can get to the kids, eventually you can get to their parents. That is the wrong perspective. It has got to be about the souls of those kids that you have the opportunity to impact. And if their parents come along, fine. See, but there's something there where even implicit within there, maybe we can get to their parents. Yeah, maybe that'll happen. But you know what? That kid who is 13 will not always be 13. And his soul matters. And so this idea that, well, maybe we can get to a real soul someday is garbage. And that's been my experience as well, is guess what? I have gotten some Bible studies, I've gotten some Bible studies and worked with people, gotten at least one lady that I can think of off the top of my head, immersed, that sort of thing. But by far, you know who's been more fruitful? The kids have been way more fruitful than their parents. And so their souls matter, because you know what? Those people that I started with, that was in 2010. So if they were 18 in 2010, they're 33 now. More or less. Those souls matter? So is it about getting to the parents? Or is it about when the Lord gives you opportunity, you walk through that door? And the Lord gave me all sorts of opportunities with those kids. So they're having an environment where they're get real questions answered. I'll tell you what, man, I got like the ghost and dinosaur question like every 6 weeks for like six straight years at least, because these were all government school kids, right? And so I had like 80 to 90% completely unchurched government school kids. So we were constantly talking about spirits and ghosts and dinosaurs. Like it was almost like I could have recorded myself and like, here we go again, right? Because one of the things that we did was you started out every fellowship when it came to lesson time. Hey man, anybody have any questions? And there really were no dumb questions. Like, I mean, there were questions that were not so intelligent, right? But I was not going to let them know that. Because they didn't know any better. There was a key contact that I had. There was a gal that I worked with, and she respected me. She respected me because we worked together. She knew my life. And so she's like, hey, I got a boy who, you know, I'm afraid of him with the crowd that he's running in, that sort of thing. And I was like, hey, I have the place for him. This is when, I don't even know at the time when I had this conversation with her if we had even started the fellowship group yet. He's part of the first two or three, right? And so he ended up, this troubled kid, he ended up bringing a ton of friends. And they didn't know up from down. Really, I mean, they did not know anything about the Bible, Scripture, but they were interested. They did want to know. And so they started bringing people, and then before you know it, their friends are bringing friends, and they're asking questions, and they're being involved, and they're coming to youth camp here in Montana, and they're coming to our lock-ins, and they're doing these things because they cared about what was being said, and they knew that they were cared about. And so as we approached starting fellowship, it wasn't because we had all of these kids coming out of our ears and, man, we should do something with them. It was really, this is what we need to do to learn the things that we need to learn. This is where we're going to have an opportunity to get reps and to really make disciples. And we can start to develop a team through the fellowship group and the people who are volunteering and helping with the fellowship group. I mean, it checks a lot of boxes. And so we didn't know where it was going to go. We had no idea how the Lord was going to bless it. And there were a lot of nights. I mean, I remember there were a lot of nights where we had no idea if anybody was going to show up or not. We're going to have fellowship. We're going to announce fellowship. And like, you know, believe it or not, kids can be pretty fickle, just like adults. It's like, oh yeah, I'm coming until I get a better offer, right? Like, I'm coming until, it's like, hey, you know what? You can't get down about that. When we have two or three kids show up, it's going to be the greatest fellowship ever. And boy, if we get seven or eight, man alive. And let me tell you, there were a lot of things that if I could go back and redo them, I would do them differently. But I learned, got feedback, iterated, changed things, got more feedback, iterated, changed things. And so the Lord ended up blessing the group tremendously. And I knew, you know, my goal starting out was when these kids get to be a certain age, you know, I want to start one-on-one Bible studies. Because, you know, I was studying, there was a gal, I think Mark was talking about her, if I'm attributing it to the wrong person, I'm sorry. Somebody was saying, if you're waiting for the perfect contact to come up to you, introduce themselves, and be like, hey, I've been waiting for somebody to teach me the Bible, you're going to be waiting a really long time. Right? It's not going to happen. I had a pretty close to that experience in college. Like, not quite that, but I had a charismatic Pentecostal guy in one of my work groups, and I tried to ignore him, guys. Like, I tried really, really hard because we were here for a work project, and we were supposed to be doing work, and, like, I could tell very clearly that this guy was not listening. He was just talking. And so I really didn't want to engage very bad even at that point because we have a job to do. Well, he continued to run his mouth to the point where I was just annoyed to death. So I couldn't take it anymore. And so I started to actually be like, well, this health and wealth gospel stuff doesn't make a whole lot of sense when I look at the lives of the disciples. Like, that doesn't seem to really jive. And so, of course, he wasn't listening. But there was a gal in my group who's like, man, I really like the way that you explain the Bible. Will you teach me? Why, yes, I will. Right? But those opportunities don't come along very often, guys. But the kids who are wanting that acceptance, who are looking for people to actually invest in them and care about them, when they see that, do you think that they would be happy to meet you for coffee? Do you think that they want to talk about what's really going on in their lives? And so the whole point was, okay, start to disciple these young people, because they will not be young people forever, and we love them for who they are right now. And so a lot of Bible studies with 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds. And a lot of them, nothing came of it. And a lot of them, something did come of it. And all of them were victories. But it was only possible because we started out with intentionality, that we decided that we were going to invest. And if the Lord blessed that, if that was what we were supposed to be doing, great. It was interesting because, like I said, we started out with two or three people. Within a few years, we were hitting 15 kids and 17 kids and sometimes 20 kids, and they were 80% unchurched kids. No involvement whatsoever. Their parents have never been to Christ Church in Wauseon. No interest whatsoever from their parents, but they were there because they wanted to be there. And so we worked with them. And we made it about them. And so had the opportunity to then get into Bible studies. And again, a lot of those Bible studies, as I mentioned, you know some of them, some of the names of some of those kids. I've shared it at various peaks. You know, I'm not going to go into his whole story, but you guys know I shared with you last year about Logan. Right? Great young guy. You know, just got married in May to another gal who frequented our fellowships groups and is in the church, and he's doing awesome, right? He's another one, and you know, a number of other names that many of you would recognize. But there's a lot of names that I could talk to you about that you guys don't have any idea and have never met because it wasn't for them. They weren't interested. But we gave them the opportunity. And so we invested in them. And it wasn't always clean and easy. Like I said, there are a lot of people within the congregation that help support. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, you know, they contributed snacks and pop and water and, you know, all sorts of things. They helped pay for kids to go to camp, and they contributed towards church vans going out to camp, and they made huge differences. And I had a crew who would volunteer every single Friday night to invest in these kids. And these kids were coming from really, really tough situations. When I was working with all of these unchurched kids, I looked around and I was like, you know, I was basically heartbroken, because I looked around and I did a quick calculation, and I didn't know for sure, but I looked around and I was like, I bet this group right here, probably 70% of these kids have been abused in some way. That was their real life situation. And so they're looking for somebody to care about them. Somebody to love them. Not to take their anger out on them, not to use them, but to love them. And it wasn't always smooth. Sometimes very trying, sometimes more humorously. This wasn't trying, it was just kind of funny. I had one gal, she'd come for a number of weeks, and she's like, I've got a question. She's like, really, you've been talking a lot about the Israelites. Yeah? Now, can you tell me more about the Israelites? Sure. It's like, you know, the Hebrew people, and I go into this explanation about how God is, you know, bringing forth the nation of Israel, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, you know, go into the explanation. She's like, yeah, but what's so special about these lights? Are they like LED? My bad. But it was real, man. lots of questions about the social and cultural issues of the day. And they knew that they were allowed to challenge me. I had the same gal actually proudly pronounced to me that she was pagan. Like, I'm pagan. I'm like, okay. I'm like, so, what do you know about paganism? Well, my neighbor's a pagan, and she's a really nice lady. Okay, tell me more. I don't really know too much else. Like, okay, well, guess what? We can talk about that. And, you know, she was not at all being, you know, controversial with that. She just thought, hey, man, neighbor's a nice lady, and she's a pagan. I should be one, too. And so these people are coming from a place where there's no foundation whatsoever, but we're giving them an opportunity to be anchored into truth, objective truth. There are other times that, again, was not just because we had pure motives and right intentions, it did not mean that things were always smooth sailing. I mean, experienced a lot of things that, looking back on them, some I can see exactly, you know, I really benefited from learning from these opportunities, but in the moment, like, growth is not enjoyable usually, right? The discipline process of the Lord a lot of times requires some suffering and some discomfort and those sorts of things. I remember taking kids out to Montana youth camp, and I don't remember how old I was. I had to have been 23 or 24. And you'll see why I know that I was one of those two ages here in a moment. Because on the way back from Montana youth camp, we were in the far left-hand lane going through Chicago. And I still, to this day, don't know what happened. I'm pretty sure that the lead car was messing around and just completely turned off their engine in that far left-hand lane. And so there ended up being about a five-car wreck that took place that included the two vans that we were bringing kids out from youth camp, bringing kids back from youth camp in. And, of course, the lead car, you know, they're the lead car, and, you know, they got off scot-free, right? No problem there. And the rest of us, you know, we had one of the cars was totaled. One of the other cars had $12,000 worth of damage, right? And the reason why I know I was 23 or 24 was because I couldn't rent a car. So I've got all of these kids that I'm responsible for. And I'm sending my wife and another gal with strangers to the Chicago airport, hoping that we can rent a van from the Chicago O'Hare airport to get these kids home. I was not the most calm that night. And I couldn't exactly, in that time and in that place, I wasn't exactly appreciating the Lord's opportunity to grow me. Again, things happen. Try to learn the things that we can learn. We started going south of Chicago after that. but again, just because you're doing things with right motives and good intentions does not mean that things are going to go the way that you think that they should go. And there's going to be roadblocks. And there's going to be hurdles. And your opportunity really has to do with what are you going to do with those roadblocks and hurdles. And that's something that we can all make application in our lives. What are you going to do when the roadblock comes? Are you going to invest more? Are you going to say, oh, there's a roadblock? You know, why would the Lord let this happen to us? We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to take kids out to have a spiritual experience at Montana Youth Camp that they can't get anywhere else, and the Lord let us get in a wreck. Could that have been the attitude? Wouldn't have been the right attitude, right? All sorts of other things that I was like, I don't have any idea how to handle these things. Shared with you guys last year, and I won't rehash that about Logan's situation, but when I got the call about the attempted murder, there's no manual for that. It's like, oh, let me look it up what I'm supposed to do in the youth minister. I didn't ever refer to myself as a youth minister, but the youth minister manual, right? Where do I go for that one? When you have a student try to be murdered, what do you do? Like, but you care about them. You love them. You be there. Had another gal. She had a situation. She moved. She hadn't been to the fellowship group in some years. Her parents weren't involved whatsoever. She's 13 years old. Took her own life. It was a heartbreaking situation. My kids all were friends with this young gal. And we had to decide, okay, what are we going to do? No, I'll be honest with you guys. Everything within me wanted to be like, hey, we're just going to do business as normal, guys. Right? You know, I was mid-20s, and nobody prepares you for this. But that's the thing about disciple making, is that, like, you get the opportunity to deal with things that nobody prepares you for because it's people's real lives. And you get to decide, do you really love people and do you really love Jesus, or you just like to talk about it? And so I wanted to just do business as usual. But, you know, I looked at some godly counsel, and of course that's not the right thing to do. You know, so there was a candlelight vigil, and I didn't know anybody there, but we took the kids and tried to support the family, went to the visitation, you know, addressed what actually happened, because that's what they needed. And that's what we're here for. Because we care about the individuals. And so the Lord gave us opportunities and continues to give us opportunities. You know, I'm thankful, you know, as I could say, there's a lot of things. It wasn't all roses. I don't have any sort of magic, you know, advice. It doesn't exist. There's lots of people who, you know, there's people that I've immersed that they've flaked out. There's people that weren't interested. There's people that have come to the fellowship group. I mean, we're talking hundreds of kids here, and you know, kids that have come to the fellowship group and decided that, you know, they're cats now. Like, I mean, it is what it is. But there are people. There are people who wanted this thing. There are people who want to follow Jesus. People that want to spend eternity with Jesus. People that want to impact the kingdom. And so, thankfully, by the grace of God, we've been able to see some of the outcomes of some of those kids who have made that choice. I'll use Logan again, since I've already told you his story and last year. And, you know, it was very interesting, because right away after Logan got dunked, you know, there were three people that he wanted me to study with. Right. And so we started studying with these people, and I was bringing him along because, again, this is all about duplicatability. It's one of the reasons why the track to run on is so important, because it's about your disciples making disciples. And so, you know, Logan just getting immersed wasn't necessarily ready to take these contacts on, but he's like, I have people who are going to be interested in this. And so I'm like, great, let's study with all of them, but you're studying with them with me. Right? It was interesting because the one kid, and again, he wasn't a kid. He was like 20-something. But, so he was a kid. But the one kid we probably studied for, I don't know, a month. Not very long. It was pretty clear he was going off to college, and he really wasn't that interested. Another kid that we studied with, who probably studied with close to a year and a half. And he was an interesting kid because he would agree with everything that we had to say, but he became increasingly disinterested. And so he wasn't interested enough to argue with us, so he would agree with us, but then there would be no engagement. There would be no follow through. And so finally it got to the point where it was like, hey, you know, it's Christmas. Again, I work hard to take excuses away from people, but we got this sense for a really long time that he was not interested anymore. So like, look, it's Christmas break. You text me back when you're ready to study. Do you think I've heard from him? No, I have not. Right? So again, gave him an opportunity. But then there was a gal that he wanted me to study with, and so studied with her, and she was a truth seeker. So she got immersed. Then guess what? She knows some people. Her mom got immersed. So immersed her mom, and guess what? Her mom knows some people. Right? So study with, again, all these people we're studying with for quite a long time. We're laying the foundation of proof that the Bible is the Word of God. We're not skipping any steps. We're going into God's plan of salvation. We're dealing with their objections. We're doing it slowly. We're doing it in a way that we're building a foundation that they can really lay their faith lives on. And so, you know, mom gets immersed. Mom has coworkers. Mom's coworker gets immersed, right? And to this day, I'm studying with one of the coworker's relatives. And that's the way that this works, right? Is that they're excited about the information that they're getting. They're excited about the things of the kingdom. They're excited about the opportunity to be able to serve in something that really matters, and that the Lord loves them, and that the Lord wants to save their souls. And so guess what? This is the doors that the Lord has opened for us to be able to walk through. And all throughout this time, one of the things that we're doing is we're working together with the team. And again, I'm focusing particularly on Friday Night Fellowship, but the Christian Education Ministry also provided a great opportunity for those kids to have places for them to be able to serve. As I mentioned, David helps in the Christian school. We're going, you know, we're, you know, 12 years into this iteration of the fellowship group. And so we have kids who are serving in the assembly, who came from directly from the fellowship group. And we have others who they were impacted. Another, you know, families that were pulled in because of that. And then there's places for them to serve in Christian education ministries, in those areas. And so the teamwork to be able to have people from the congregation learning to work with people and getting real live reps, that's really valuable. That's really valuable to get real live reps. And so one of the things that we made within our culture is that I'm also going to give my team, if we want to put it that way, it's all Jesus's team, but the fellowship team, they get feedback. Because, again, how are we supposed to know if it's being effective or not if you're not getting any feedback? And so make it part of the culture that there are feedback mechanisms in place where we're going to coach you and you're going to get coached if you're going to continue to work in this really valuable ministry, because that's what it is really valuable. Too often, okay, the emphasis is not placed on the young people because they're an afterthought. Okay? Just really want to encourage us to continue to invest and to understand that that is a training ground. And it's a training ground for our adults. It's a training ground for young Christians. It's a training ground to be able to communicate that love that they have. Because so often what happens, you know, you get, you know, a lot of times young men in particular, they want to preach from the front, right? And they want to pontificate about how wise they are. And it's interesting because it's like, well, there's opportunities here to actually serve. There's opportunities to actually get in other people's lives, invest in them, and care about them. Let's do that. Like, I'm fine getting you up there if you're willing to do that other work too. And so the Christian Education Ministry, the Friday Night Fellowship groups, all of these things provide a foundation, a basis for them to then get feedback as to how am I doing? Because I don't know about you, but what I've observed in my own life personally and what I've observed from other people is that self-deception can be really powerful. You can think that you're doing a good job, but are you? Probably important to have some feedback mechanisms in place to know whether or not you're actually doing a good job. A few things, just as I guess I'll begin to wrap up. A few things to think about. One of the things with the Friday Night Fellowship group that we dedicated ourselves to is that we were going to do it consistently. And that's not always easy. We did it every single week from 7 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. For us, what worked, and again, different places, different things are going to work for different people. I'm not saying this is the way that anybody else needs to run their fellowship group, anything like that. But I am saying that consistency has made a huge difference for us. Because what has happened, what I've noticed is that some of the fellowships that have been the best fellowships that we have been in the summer, where there tends to be a thought of there's going to be less kids here, so what's it matter anyway? Let's just call it off. It's easier for all of us to do that. And there's been some amazing things that have taken place in the summer when there's a few less kids there. And so we make it so that 7 to 9:45, parents know what to expect. And so they know they can pick up their kids at 9:45, and I do a good job of making sure that I'm done at 9:45. Sometimes we get to 9:50, but that's just between us. Okay? But we do it consistently. They're having fellowship tonight, right? I'm not there. Right? I don't need to be there every single week at this point. I am, because it's still worth my investment, and I'm still training some of those young people. But you know what? They're going to have a great fellowship tonight without me. And it's kind of interesting because, with the exception of Brenna, all three people who are working the Friday Night Fellowship tonight are products of the Friday Night Fellowship group. All three of them. Right? And so, again, that's the vision of what we're going for. And if you don't continue to be, the only way you get there is if you're consistent through week to week and year to year. Consistency makes a huge difference. Again, teamwork. One of the things that I try to do is to communicate the vision. It's particularly important to enlist the right people. There are places in the body for people to be able to serve. But just because someone is willing to serve in a position does not mean that they're the right person for that position. And so I'm selective about who it is that is going to work in a capacity directly with the kids, because those are the valuable ones, right? And so there are opportunities for anybody to contribute snacks. There are opportunities for anybody to contribute drinks. There are opportunities for people to be able to give towards sending the kids to camp. There's opportunities for people to be able to come and to clean the building after fellowship is over. I mean, I've had specifically people who are willing to come after fellowship's over at 9:45 to then come and clean the building. Because again, if you're so worried about the kids making a mess, right, that overrides what fellowship looks like, guess what? They get that and they're like, okay, cool, whatever, I'm out. And so there's been people who have specifically cleaned because that was the right spot for them at that time. That doesn't mean that's the right spot for them forever, right? But he who is faithful in little is also faithful in much, right? So I've had drivers. It's one of the things that we had to do when we had 80% unchurched kids. Do you think that their parents are interested at all in helping to bring them to a church fellowship function on Friday nights? Absolutely not. So when we're having those 20 kids come to fellowship, guess what? They got to get there somehow. So we had a regular pickup time in a town called Delta, which is about 7 miles away from Wauseon, where everybody met at the public library, and we would go and pick them up. Brenna and I bought a church van. Because that's what needed to be done. Needed to buy a church van. Because we got to haul these kids. And then I would have kids from other neighboring towns, drivers from other neighboring towns, bring these kids. And guess what? Then they got to go back home. Right? It was funny. One night in particular, we were... we always had our costume party over Christmas because, of course, you can't have it in October. So we had our costume party over Christmas, and it was interesting because one guy had, like, a gas mask on, and the police showed up at the Delta Public Library because I think they thought an act of terrorism was going on. So that you, if you do this sort of thing, you get a lot of really fun stories. We tried to dissuade the officer that everything was fine. I think he bought it because he let us go. But, you know, there were opportunities there where these kids, you can't just be like, well, we had it, and I just don't know why people didn't show up. Well, you have to make it happen. You have to make it happen. You have to invest. You have to put it on the line. And again, of course you don't have to. If you don't love God and love others, hey, no, you don't have to. Absolutely not. You don't have to go make disciples. Jesus just commanded it, right? So if you're not interested in listening to Jesus' commands, then I guess it's not particularly relevant at all, right? But we were, and we wanted to invest. And so we'd pick kids up at the Delta Library, and then we would take them back to their houses, which again, I wasn't like, we've got a radius and you fall just outside of the radius, so I'm sorry, that's not going to be able to work this week. I mean, that does really sound like something Jesus would say, but I just didn't feel right about it, you know? And so, you know, we would have kids from between Wauseon and Toledo, which Toledo, you know, we would be on the east side of Swanton towards Toledo. So it's a good 15, 20 miles. We go one way, pick them up, okay, take them back the other way. David, who I was telling you about earlier, we had a group who, they were really dedicated. This group was in the church. And, you know, a gal, wonderful lady, she was really interested in having her kids be involved in everything that we were doing. But they lived in Indiana. They lived an hour and 10 minutes away, one way from the church building. And so what she would do is she would drop those kids off at the church building, okay? And then we would get done at 9:45, and David would take them back west an hour and 10 minutes, drop them off, and then come home. So I'm sure glad I didn't kick him out that night for that obscene gesture. I'm sure glad I didn't say, why don't you never come back, son? And he did this for years. And so trying to communicate to all of us is that there is a necessity to invest. Are we going to go where the doors are open? The Lord has opened doors that I just couldn't imagine. But I do want to be faithful in stepping through those doors. I want to be faithful. And you know what? A lot of times that doesn't make sense to other people. But I'm not really concerned about what other people think. I'm concerned about what the Lord would think. And so a wise guy once said that it's more about effectiveness than efficiency. And so I've tried to take that to heart because I saw a lot of wisdom in the idea of effectiveness over efficiency. And so my encouragement, again, as I begin to wrap up, my encouragement is to be willing to do what it takes. Whatever it takes. again, you don't know what that's going to look like, but you also don't know what the Lord is going to do with your willingness to be a good steward. And there are opportunities for us all to buy in. There are opportunities for us all to invest if we're willing to do it. We've been doing this now. Again, this is not like year number 53 for us or anything like that. But we've been plugging away at Fellowship since 2010 in this iteration. Again, there was a couple of iterations before this. Since 2010. And I don't know. I mean, I definitely, there are times where I'm like, you know, the kids are talking in a way that I don't quite understand. I do try to stay up on the lingo. But it's important. And so I don't hold on to the reins so tightly. There'll be people like those tonight that they're the next generation. But we're not going to hurry up that process just because I decide that I want to do something else. This is worth investing in. And encourage us all, as really appreciated this thought that Lorenzo brought out as well, is a willingness to be uncomfortable because you're committed to growth. You got to be committed to growth. You need to learn along the way, because if we're unwilling to learn along the way, we'll continue to do the same thing expecting a different result, and I think that that's the definition of insanity. And so it looks differently. Guys, again, I made some mistakes early on. Early on, I mean, it's getting hard for me to admit this now, but I had these unchurched kids coming in, and so like one of the things that we would do just to pass the time as they came in is that we would play video games, right? Now again, that's where they're at. It was a way to connect. It wasn't the worst thing ever, but that's not something that I decided that I wanted to continue because it wasn't creating what I ultimately wanted, right? But it's how I learned that lesson, right? So again, be willing to try stuff. Be willing to do what works and then to go for it. I'm tremendously blessed and do want to put a plug in here for Brenna. I'm really thankful. We wouldn't have been able to do the things that we've done without Brenna. And her being on board, her being 100% invested in Fellowship has made a world of difference, because there are a lot of things that, like, I'll admit to you guys, I am not very fun, right? I have earned the reputation amongst some of my peers along the way as Mr. Killjoy, right? I'm not the hangout guy. Like, that's just not me, okay? But you know what? My wife is a lot of fun, which it's a good thing that one of us are, right? And she knows how the kids can have fun and to make it enjoyable for them. Again, it's not about the fun. It's not about the games. But again, we're trying to do things to communicate that we care about them, right? And another round of Bible trivia as our game for the night doesn't exactly communicate that you're thinking about and care about them, especially with 80% unchurched kids, right? It's like, who are the Israelites? It doesn't work great, right? So my encouragement is get your families on board. We did. We made a policy. You know, this is important. This is about the kids. So guess what? Our kids don't come to Fellowship. We do that with Christian school too. Again, different things work for different places, but kids, this is about the Fellowship kids. And so there's nothing that says, hey, awesome time that's all about the teenagers, like having a screaming two-year-old. Like, that's awesome, right? So we made it, even though it's not convenient. We've got three kids. But guess what? My wife, my mom watches the kids every single Friday night for us. Because it's that important. Because she's invested. Now, do you think that those kids at Fellowship know that Mary Jo Harbor really makes Fellowship go? But the Lord does. That's really my encouragement for all of us. Invest. It's not about any one thing that we do. But it's about loving God and loving others. And if we love God and we love others, we take a look at what's effective. And we do the thing that's effective. And we evaluate. And we iterate. And then we do the thing that's effective. Then we do it again. We do it again. We do it again. We do it again. And we trust the Lord for the results. And the result of all that, because we trust God, because we have faith in God, we let Him take care of the results. And within working through all of that, we get to end up hearing, "Well done, good and faithful servant."